He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is the Tuesday show edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager, Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I've got Barry Kite here, our chartered financial analyst. And, you know, I took a look. The market really got out of the gate quite quickly here this morning. And I looked at it real quick at the stocks that were moving within the market. And I said to myself, this is not a quality setup at all. It was a very poor quality. And I see that that market's already fading. Now, the Dow's still up 215, but the S&P is now up just 18, and the NASDAQ has actually gone negative for now. It's down 9 points. So, yeah, you know, but the oil stocks are doing well. That's the big game in town again today as it was yesterday. Oil's up another $1.08 to $110.65. You know, it was closing in at $100 per barrel here recently, and it seems like the G7 meeting and kind of the frantic nature of what are we going to do for energy and oil, really no solutions coming out of that. I think that has probably pushed oil prices back up again, and you know, we'll see what happens there with oil. I'm still bullish on it. Gold's down $3, 1822. Silver's down 9 cents to 2108. We've got the 10-year is quiet at 3.23. Bitcoin is up $345 to 21,059, but a far cry from where it has been recently. Quite a sell-off there in the cryptos. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management, Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst. You know, Barry, last week was a big jump in the markets. I think for the week the market was up about 5%, the indexes, the S&P 500, the Dow. And, you know, just looking at the chart, you'd have to have a V-shaped recovery for that to continue and for that to, you know, bring this recent sell-off, which is a bear market sell-off. Every index has been down more than 20% from its high. And, you know, I made the case in my article last week in the last week's newsletter Saturday, that I can't really imagine a V-shaped recovery because there's too many darn obstacles out there this time. It's not like COVID, which we priced in very quickly and the market immediately turned around and came storming back. This time we have inflation. We have these high energy prices. We have shortages. We've talked a lot about the supply chain disruption that's not improving. But more than anything, we have the Fed in our face. And that's a pretty strong wind in our face. I wrote an article. You probably haven't even seen it. I didn't even tell you about it. I submitted it last night to Seeking Alpha, and it's out there today.
Yeah, I saw the wink. I got an alert on my phone from Seeking Alpha.
Great. So, yeah. Okay, so if you're out there and you want to know our current take on the market, number one, and number two, I am finding some good spots in the market. It's truly a stock picker's market here. And, you know, the field is very narrow right now of good areas of the market. And, you know, last week it was kind of hard to watch the market go up, and we didn't participate. We participated a little bit. And, you know, that always brings some wrath down from investors and whatnot. But you know what? I have to go with what I see beyond my nose, beyond today and tomorrow and the next day. I have to look down over the next several weeks, the market, or several months. The market's looking down over the next couple of years. And I just have to be honest, the market doesn't really like what it sees right now. But having said that, there are good sectors in the market that have been created by some of the actions that are being taken in various sectors of the market. And then yesterday we returned right back to where we were before last week. And nothing worked in the market yesterday except for that energy sector. And, man, it was on fire yesterday, one of the best sectors in the market by far. Really, nothing else really worked in the market yesterday. So you know what? I stand by my convictions. You're not going to be right every single day, and you're going to have people question you and say, you know, but I just have to go. I'm very much a mathematical, statistical probability. I want the odds in my favor, and I want to protect my clients during tricky times. And I see a lot of people agree with us here today, which we'll get to here in a bit. Okay, so yesterday the Dow was down 62, the NASDAQ was down 83, but the oil and gas stocks, they were just on fire yesterday. And last time I looked, they were the sector today that was on fire. We'll see if that sustains itself. But here's the big news that I took away from yesterday, Barry. The 10-year and the 2-year, that gap is now just 6 basis points. As of this morning, the 10-year is at 3.13, and the 2-year, or the 10-year's at 3.19, and the 2-year's at 3.13. You almost have parity there. And, of course, an inversion is a pretty strong signal that the market's expecting a recession. There's no guarantees. But that gap has narrowed considerably here in the last several weeks.
Yeah, and it's inverted in parts. I mean, you look at the 3 years at right at, you know, 3.22, which is where the 10-year is at the moment, and then the 5 years at 3.26. So, you know, you're inverted at the 5-year and the 7-year level, because 7 years at 3.29. So it's pretty interesting when you can get a better rate on say a 5-year note, yes, than you can on a 10-year note.
Why buy the 10-year?
Right.
Okay, and the energy sector yesterday was up almost 3% versus the S&P minus 0.3, and it went back to all the same stocks. The top 15 gainers on the S&P 500 were Valero, Devon Energy, Hess, Marathon, Halliburton, Diamondback, Phillips 66, Baker Hughes, Pioneer, EOG, and the natural gas futures were back up 4.5%. Now, at the G7 yesterday, they mentioned a price cap on the sale and purchase of Russia's oil. I can't imagine how that would work out. I mean, the whole world would have to agree, and Russia would have to go along. You know, they'd have to be willing to sell their oil at whatever price the G7 calls out and says, well, you know, we'll buy your oil, but $50, whatever the number is, per barrel would be the cap.
And doesn't that defeat the purpose in the first place? I mean,
why buy it at all?
Right. That's what that was kind of, that was when I was reading that, I was kind of, it confused me, because
very confusing.
Yeah. I mean, the point is, you know, I thought the point was to not purchase anything.
To punish the guy.
Right.
I mean, it probably cost him, I don't know, $35 a barrel to get it out of the ground. Anything above that's a profit. Either going to, you're either going to put sanctions on the guy or you're not going to put sanctions on the guy. Now, Christine Lagarde, she's the European Central Bank president. She's suppressed. Okay, we call this jawboning, all right? She's trying to talk it down. She suppressed concerns over a recession as the central bank had outlined the fact that the ECB is prepared to raise rates at a quicker pace if inflation continues to escalate. Well, I don't know how that suppresses concerns over a recession. because if you continue to raise rates at a quicker pace, that's very, very recessionary. But, you know, the Eurozone, 8.1% is their inflation number. They have markedly revised down their forecast for growth over the next 2 years. But she says they are still expecting positive growth rates due to the domestic buffers against the loss of growth momentum. Well, we'll see. And they are prepared. I think the key takeaway for me is they're prepared to move faster on the rate hikes, which is recessionary in nature. All right, when we come back, oh boy, there's some interesting macro calls out there on the street today, and they agree with us. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. I'm going to get to these macro forecasts, but Barry, I need about 1 minute to run and get my power cord, okay? So give me 1 minute. I'll be right back. Okay.
Yeah. No, the, I think today, you know, interesting pieces is from a bond standpoint, as Bill was mentioning in terms of Europe and you know, Lagarde mentioning raising rates as needed with inflation. If you look at, we've been so used to such low yields in Europe, and I think interesting thing is to, take a look at some of the Eurozone rates. I mean, you've got the German Bund now at essentially a 1.64%. Rate versus, probably 12 months ago, it was still a negative rate at that point in time. So things have moved pretty quickly there, and that's, Italy's at 3.68, and for a long time, Italy was far below our 10-year yield. So it's certainly pretty interesting in looking across the pond at what's going on with the yields over there.
Yeah, exactly. And, I saw an inflation report today for Canada. That was like a 40-year high in Canada. And their consumer sentiment is just plummeting. Okay, now that's a member of the G7. You know, I see Justin Trudeau over there in all of the photo ops. And so, that's kind of happening. If it's happening in Canada, you would think that other countries have the same problem. Okay, now, here's a couple things that came through today. Asia coal prices jumped to record high. Okay, so the coal stocks are on the move today. I'm seeing that same pattern again. When the world stops, when investors stop and think about this bridge to, solar nirvana and wind nirvana, there's a problem, and you're cutting off and you're punishing the fossil fuel industry. It's driving prices higher. There's no question about it, which I'm sure is one of their objectives with all of this. But now you're seeing the coal stocks in play once again. I saw Peabody Energy, Arch, and others on the move, which is quite unusual. I mean, making money off the coal stocks right now. But here is the story that jumps off the page for me today. Okay, our last article. This was back before the one you helped with on the individual stock. I wrote about the S&P 500 estimates and target price being too high. Okay, that was back on May 24th
So here we are exactly 1 month later. I said the title of that article was Current Consensus S&P 500 Target Prices Are Way Too High. And I also made the case that the current estimates are way too high. Well, look at this. Goldman Sachs today, this is 35 days after our article, earnings estimates for 2023 look too optimistic, says Goldman Sachs. Okay, they say that profit margin expansion across the broader market next year is not likely. Those estimates look too confident. They said that earnings estimates are likely too high. This is coming from Goldman strategist Ben Snyder. Now, this is also very important because I haven't seen this dynamic really over the last many years. I've only seen the estimates are too low, and they ended up being too low. Now we have a shift. We have a turn to people saying, like Goldman Sachs, that they're too high. He says, excluding financials and utilities, analysts show S&P net growth margins expanding next year, and they don't think that's going to happen. I'm also starting to see these estimates decline for next year. And I've seen in the last 3 weeks, I've seen the target price for the S&P 500 come down from 5,200 to 4,900. This has not happened. This has not happened in a long time. So anyways, Goldman Sachs agrees. Now, here comes the next one. Okay, we put out our target price every week, every Saturday. I put my neck on the line for better or worse, and use my mathematical equation to put out our current target price on the S&P 500. Citigroup today cuts their S&P 500 target to 4,200. Okay, now the consensus just 3 weeks ago was 5,300, and I predicted that you're going to see these numbers come down considerably. Now, the deal is Citigroup is one of a number of analysts that contribute to the consensus. So the consensus comes down very slowly. One by one, you know, a Citigroup sends in their new estimates. And that's divided, and that is just, you know, added up to all the others and divided by the number of analysts. So that number is a lagging indicator, big time. And I said that not only are the individual analysts going to start lowering their target prices, but that consensus obviously has to come down also. And we address that in today's article that was just published at 6 a.m. this morning. Actually, 3 a.m., 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check out our target price for the S&P 500 because, you know, this is where you have to begin. You have to have a market outlook. If your market outlook is extremely bullish, then you can look within all of the sectors of the market, basically. They're all in play because the economy is booming. Okay, that was much of 2016 to 2020, all sectors were in play. The economy was booming. And then about COVID, and then, of course, 2020, January of 2021, it's kind of reversed, and it's just kind of the opposite where you have to be in only the sectors that are working, as the sectors have been falling by the wayside one by one. So now, okay, they say 4,200 is their target price, Citigroup, and we're at, on the S&P 500 right now, where are we at? 3,900. We hit 3,900 yesterday. So that's only 300 points. Upside potential. That means that overall the risk to reward ratio for the market has narrowed considerably. But having said that, it's a market of stocks. It's a market of sectors. And there still are favorable sectors within a market that is not quite as boisterous as it was during the 2016 to 2020 years. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, here's a one more point I want to make on this Citigroup article. Okay, that they lowered their target price. Their target price was $4,700, so they're going down 500 points. And they also have three different scenarios: 50% scenario. That we have a soft landing. We come in for a soft landing. Growth continues. Rate hikes are sufficient to tame prices. Okay, that would take the S&P to 4,700. That's a 50% chance. Number two scenario, they give this a 40% weighting, is higher inflation where supply shocks don't abate. That's personally the scenario I see. I don't see these supply shocks getting any better anytime soon, and long run inflation remains anchored. That's given a 40% weighting. That would take the S&P to 3650. And then their third one is a global recession where rate hikes persist and they can't get inflation down. They're only giving that a 5% chance, and they say that would take the S&P down to 3150. Okay, we did have an S&P 500 company report. Nike last night, they beat by 9 cents, and their revenues beat the quarter. Now, that goes into the last quarter, I believe. I don't think that makes it into this quarter, because this quarter doesn't end until a Thursday. And then the numbers will start being counted, and they'll all apply to the third quarter of 2022, but we'll be getting the results of the second quarter. Canadian consumer confidence drops to the lowest level since COVID as inflation soars in Canada. We mentioned that. It's that consumer confidence part of the story that worries me, because we've also seen, haven't we, Barry, hasn't consumer confidence been dropping here in the States?
Yeah, and consumer confidence, actually that number came out this morning, I think right before the show, and it actually was, I believe it's the lowest since, I want to say since February of 2021, and so if you kind of think back to, Omicron and, kind of what started occurring in that's kind of where inflation, the whole talk about inflation, no longer being transitory, right? That's kind
exactly.
of when that kicked in. And so the most concerning part of the I think of the consumer confidence number was the fact that what they refer to as the expectations index, which was 66.4. And really anything below 80 suggests kind of weaker growth ahead. I think it was 73.7, I think, last month, and 66.4 this month. So the expectations well below that kind of 80 range. But.
Well, Buffett keeps buying oil. He's going to end up owning Occidental Petroleum. Petroleum, I think, because, he's on the path to buy the entire company, which he's done many times before. And, I just looked at the market here during the break. It's all oil again today, much like yesterday. The oil stocks are on fire, and I'm sure his buying of Occidental and his continued vote of confidence in the sector may be helping. This is an interesting story. Cummins Engines teaming up with Hylion, H-Y-L-N, which is one of the electric car companies, to look into to optimize Cummins' natural gas engine as the generator for the Hypertruck ERX powertrain. Well, we've kind of been wondering when, so this would be a combination of electric and natural gas, liquid natural gas. Okay, I like that one. That sounds like a good combination to me. That's like peanut butter and chocolate there. I mean, very little in the way of emissions, carbon emissions. We have lots of liquid natural gas. It's a lot cheaper than maybe not. I don't know these days how much a gallon of liquid natural gas is. But as far as the climate is concerned, that would be a nice little hybrid engine. So I've got Hylian on my watch list. I have had it there for a long time, H-Y-L-N. Equinor continues to be a powerhouse. I mean, if you want exposure to the gas problem and oil problems in Europe, there's three kind of big players. There's Total Energy, TTE, out of France. There's Repsol, R-E-P-Y-Y, out of Spain. But by far the biggest player at $116 billion is Equinor, E-Q-N-R. And Barry, you wrote a fine article about Equinor not too long ago. Equinor's having a huge day. It had a huge day again yesterday. It did sell off with the oil stocks last week. But Equinor is really diversifying their portfolio. They are teaming up with another company to jointly buy three United Kingdom power plants. So I'm going to look into that, the company that they're teaming up with. Equinor is also heavily involved in this decarbonization where they store the carbon. You know more about that.
That's where essentially they're creating they get the storage facilities underground, and they're taking I don't know exactly how they do it, but they're taking carbon right out of the air and putting it essentially into storage tanks in the ground. So pretty unique. It'd be interesting to see what happens, if let's just say this takes hold and everyone, start storing carbon underground, and then at some point,
will that kill the trees?
Right? I'm not sure. I don't know.
What will the trees breathe?
Right.
We have to all get along.
But that's a different, those are kind of some of the, in my opinion, those are kind of some of those, technologies where, we don't really know, right, what,
the future holds,
right, in terms
what
of
what if it leaks?
Green.
What if it blows up?
What if it all comes out at the same time? Like, that could be
a big, giant earthquake, and we've got carbon everywhere. Anyways, so. Taiwan Semiconductor rises, a 6% price hike coming in January. The semiconductor sector, you look at a chart of Taiwan Semi, it looks terrible. It looks like, 80% of the stocks in the market right now, maybe 85%, downtrends. They're in downtrends, okay? I don't buy stocks in downtrends. And even though Taiwan looks very, very cheap at this level, and their earnings look very, very good, that's just a lousy chart on Taiwan. It was up 6%. It's given it all back. That's not a good sign. So the semiconductor remains challenged. Okay, here's another one that I just want to mention. I have noticed that the renewable, that's really coming alive recently. And I think the catalyst there, the spark that got it going, was the removal of the tariffs. There was so much complaining from the U.S. solar industry that, hey, we cannot ramp up projects unless we have the solar panels to do it with. And of course, those panels are made in that controversial province in China where the Uyghur Muslims are. Well, they finally removed the tariffs, and I'm just seeing a lot of the renewable stocks blast off. One I'd like to bring to your attention is Clearway Energy. I kind of know some of the players there, indirectly, and they're a major player in the U.S. of buying and operating renewable projects, especially in the wind arena. And Clearway currently has a relative strength of 93. It's trading at about 40 times forward earnings. but definitely a major player when it comes, because the renewables, look, it's going to grow. It's going to grow. They make a deal today for a $255 million wind deal. So for them, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. That's Clear Wind Energy, which is CWEN. So if I was to point out a few sectors in the market that are working in this market, they're few and far between, but absolutely the oil, the energy, anything involving energy, hydrocarbon, wind, solar, oil, natural gas, coal, you name it, that seems to be the world's big problem right now. And in the meantime, I know that the farmers are calling for, hey, you know what? We're making all of this, turning all of this grain into energy. We're going to have a food shortage. Well, on that happy note, we'll be right back with the stocks that are popping today. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Dow up just a quarter of a percent right now. It's up 74 points. The S&P has gone negative, down 2. And the NASDAQ is now down 73. It still looks the most vulnerable to me, the high tech. You know, one force at work this week that we didn't have last week is we have interest rates going back up again. They fell precipitously last week, and it was on recession fears. Okay, so that's not a good reason for it to fall. That's bearish for the market, but the market went up last week. And then, of course, this week we have just the opposite. We have the interest rates going back up again, and that's hurting the NASDAQ. It's hurting those tech stocks, which still don't look very, very good. So I've got four stocks here today from four different categories. Let's go to coal first, all right? Get a little coal in your stocking at Christmas time. Well, it's going up in price. Hallador Energy, hallelujah, HNRG, is a coal stock out of Terre Haute, Indiana. You didn't know they had coal in Indiana, I'll bet. But they do, the Carlisle Mine in western Indiana. They also get a lot of, I had a client for quite some time that got, one of those, granite. Maybe it was granite out of Indiana under the ground, the Hoosier State. HNRG, Hallador, currently has a relative strength of 99. It doesn't get any hotter than that. Too hot to touch. That stock's up 6.8% today. The forward PE is about 6.5 and a relative strength of 99. This is a micro cap, however. Keep that in mind. It's $193 million. It's just ironic that with this giant move to a green economy and green energy, the coal stocks are some of the hottest stocks in the market. Not for long, I suppose. Their days are numbered. Now, the EV market has been moving recently, especially in China. I guess China, you know, they have their annual big powwow, their big red conference where all the Communist Party gets together and, you know, and kind of outlines their goals for the year and whatnot. And they are going to continue the tax breaks or whatever they give, incentives for buying electric cars. They seem to be way ahead of us in cranking out electric cars. What's the one Buffett's invested in? Boyd. And did you write an article on that one, Boyd?
Yeah. I think we wrote that one up. I know we wrote NIO.
Yeah.
I think Li Auto was another one that we wrote up. I think the only one we didn't end up writing up was I think XPeng, just because it kind of got touched on in some of the other articles. And, you know, we had already penned about three electric
yes.
car electric vehicle
yes.
articles for
and
China,
we kind of so. Call Boyd the most diversified of all because they have a lot of other things and they make rechargeable batteries and whatnot. This is a $114 billion company. The symbol is BYDDF. And the F on the end indicates that, number one, it's foreign, and number two, that it trades on the pink sheets. But it trades big volume. It's already traded 95,000 shares. Its average daily volume is 110,000 shares. Now, one of the prettiest stock charts in the entire market is a long saucer shape, a saucer, and then a breakout. And that's exactly what is happening on the one-year chart. If you look at that, that's a picture perfect on four times normal volume, BYDDF. Now, I can't say that that's Buffett in there buying more of Boyd. He's been buying Occidental Petroleum. Maybe he's hedging his bet by also buying an EV stock for his portfolio. But Boyd has a relative strength of 98. It's fairly expensive, though. It's trading at about 65 times forward earnings. But they're profitable. So BYDDF, I'll have time for maybe one more here. I think the purest play, one of them, for natural gas. And natural gas seems to get a pass right now. Okay, it's not being taken off the menu of potential sources of fuel, even fossil fuel. Chesapeake, a very storied company with a lot of a checkered past out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I had some people visit me last week from, I think, Enid, Oklahoma, which is right by Oklahoma City. They were inquiring about our services here, Barry, that we offer, and they were in the neighborhood. They were traveling through. He's listened to my show for a number of years. We have San Diego roots in common with each other. Chesapeake, CHK, has grown back. I mean, this was a stock that went bankrupt, and they brought it out of bankruptcy, and it's been coming back ever since. It's up to $11 billion. In market cap. It's up 4% on big volume today, so definitely that sell-off in oil stocks, I believed it was a buying opportunity, and so far, the last 2 days at least, that's exactly what it's been, and I believe that the big move in the market last week was a bear market move, and it wouldn't follow through, and so far, that's been the case. Well, we'll see what happens. I have an article out there that backs, you know, the way I feel up with the statistics and the numbers and the charts for your own observation. You know, it's kind of like being a scientist. You look at the facts, you look at the evidence, and you look at past history of what you've witnessed in the past out of these different charts and the setups and where we're at right now in the economy. And that's what I base my current market outlook on. And I also mentioned some of our top picks in that article. If you go to seekingalpha.com, there's a reason why we're ranked in the top 2% of all of the writers out there on Seeking Alpha. So if you're not following us, can't they follow us and then they'll get an alert when a new article comes out?
Yeah, Barry? That's actually how I got yours. Got it this morning.
I'm glad you follow us. Thank you very much. Now I have two followers. You and my
we
wife.
Eat our own cooking.
So. Yes. All right. Well, that's been fun. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST or check out the website. Get the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. Go to Seeking Alpha and read our latest article. Take care.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.